Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator, broadcasting to you live from our home in Romeoville, Illinois.
This is the September episode, number 257. Wow. And as always, you can find in our notes links to the things that we talk about and other odds and ends that we don't talk about that we thought might interest you.
Yes, this episode is full of great topics. We have many interesting things to talk about, some of them RV related and some of them not. But I'm sure you noticed that at the beginning that the introduction by David Pogue has dramatically improved.
Thanks to the advice from one of our listeners.
Yes. Since we recorded it many years ago, it has been somewhat distorted due to problems that I had at the time. But we have since used AI to fix it. I've been working over the past couple of months to reduce the distortion, and I'm glad to say that it has improved. So it will remain as our introduction to the RV Navigator Podcast.
Because we want David to be sounding his best. He's one of Ken's heroes.
Yes, indeed.
And I like him too.
And I hope you read his Substack.
I mean, do.
He's always very interesting. He's an excellent writer and has many interesting topics that are compatible with our topics. Wait, we need the shoulder report.
It has been about 2.5 months since I had my shoulder replacement. My therapist and I have been working very hard to do exercises, many of which are so negligible looking that Ken can hardly tell that I am exercising.
Are you exercising? And she's pushing a ball against the wall.
And he walks by and he laughs.
Well, you're doing stretching and making mobility,
range of motion.
And you have increased your degrees of motion, correct?
Somewhat. I would say when I think about my levels of pain and my capabilities, I have returned myself to the sorry state that I was in May when I decided that I absolutely had to have this surgery. This was a very big operation, and they have removed a good chunk of me and put in false parts, and it takes a while to recover from this. But I can do much more than I did 2 months ago and have high hopes to improve to the point where I'm going to play hooky from my physical therapy, and we are going to hit the road. I'm so excited.
Yes, we are very glad that we did change our plans. We were planning to be gone at this very moment. We were going to be in Iceland enjoying some cold weather and some glaciers and things, but we decided to cancel those plans, and I think in retrospect that was a very good idea. We postponed it for a year. So next year you'll be hearing about us in Iceland, maybe, unless we have another issue. But at 10 weeks out, Martha is still definitely recovering, but is on the road to recovery, I would say.
Yeah.
If you are planning on getting shoulder surgery, you probably should expect at least 10 weeks of recovery and then some more.
Well, I have to put a caveat on that because I have joined numerous Facebook groups for all of my ailing joints, and it is quite amazing to me when I read them all that people have such different experiences as they go through this. You might think things like, well, Martha's kind of old now, maybe that's what's taking her longer, but that's really not it. We're all built differently. We all have different tolerances for pain. We're all going to different surgeons who are giving us different drugs. There are many, many variables. You want to try to educate yourself if you are ever in the sorry state that I was in and considering an operation like this. But the remarks that people make and the experiences that they will share with you vary greatly, and you have to wait and see how it turns out for you.
Right, and there are so many variables. We found out that you could actually swap the ball and the socket and put the ball in the top part of the shoulder and the socket in the arm.
And which is called a reverse shoulder replacement.
And why would you do that?
Because the stuff that is that the ball and socket are supposed to go in are so worn out, they just take it all out.
Whoa.
So if, for example, God forbid, I fell down and re-injured this shoulder, that would be what they would do with me next.
Oh.
Fun times.
That just looks funny to see it that way. But so the bottom line is there's a lot of variability with the shoulder replacement. And it's modern medicine. I guess it seems to work okay as long as you get the right thing for the right job. We want to move on to a very hot topic on the RV Navigator webpage, and that is about a smoothie. You know, we bought a smoothie machine.
I was surprised you wanted to share your experiences about it.
Last time I asked for listener recipes, and we certainly got quite a few.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
How come I didn't see them?
Well, because most of them were green.
Oh.
And I do not do greens.
You don't do green much of anything.
In all honesty, I have to say I've never had a green smoothie. Maybe on the next cruise I will definitely give that a try.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we found, frankly, a lot of fun frozen fruit bags at the grocery store. I didn't realize there were so many that you could buy virtually any combination of fruit in the frozen section at the grocery store. And then, of course, the smoothie machine just takes it and pulverizes it all and makes it into a smoothie quickly and easily. So we've been kind of just trying out some of the different ones, and it's been fun.
The machine we have makes smoothies for the two of us and is fairly large and fairly heavy, but I have to think if you are an ardent smoothie consumer, you can buy a one-person machine and make them in your rig.
Well, they even have the ones that make it in the cup that you're going to drink it out of.
It's important.
So ours makes
your
two large portions, I would say.
Right.
We actually have a hard time pouring it out. It's so thick. But maybe we should put in more.
Maybe we don't know what we're doing.
So we probably need some more recipes. So, dear listener, if you have a favorite fruit smoothie.
Non-green.
Now, I'm happy to add we added chia seeds and we added
but
various
didn't
other
like
nuts.
Them.
Oh, that was okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't put them in since then.
Well, that's not my fault.
Anyway. I think it is.
So our next topic is Starlink. Oh, wait a minute. There is nothing to talk about with Starlink.
What a shame.
I do want to mention, though, that the Falcon 9 rocket that is used to launch the 29 satellites on a regular basis a couple times a week, they're no longer going to be launching it from Florida.
Oh, no. The show's going to be over?
Well, the Falcon show's going to be over. But the Starship, the launch pad for the Starship is almost finished, and they will probably before Christmas be launching not 30 satellites per launch, but more like 60.
That doesn't trouble me as much as I want to have launches fairly often, so I can go see them whenever
Elon
I feel like
Elon is talking
it.
About having launches in Florida, a brand new launch site in Texas, and another launch site in Vandenberg, California. Okay. And he's going to be launching weekly from all three of those sites.
And soon the sky will darken and we will no longer see the sun.
That could well be. They had, I saw the number as 1.3 million satellites.
Oh, my God.
In the air. I mean, not just Starlink. Over the past couple of months, we have been talking about various important reasons why you should travel. We obviously travel extensively, whether it's in our RV or whether we are traveling overseas. But we think that travel is important for everybody, and we hope that you agree with us. And we have a couple of articles that we have shared with you, and we have a new one this month. The article is 18 Unhinged Things Americans Should Be Thinking About. People are calling out the most unhinged things about America that we all just accept as normal. Now, digest that for a minute. We, as Americans, have kind of a preset notion about how things should be, but we don't know how it is in other parts of the world. Americans seem to have no idea that they have the worst of almost everything if they are just a regular person. No health benefits, pay, vacation time, maternity leave, ability to retire, food, social connections, education, building codes, and the constant worry it's endless. Everything is monetized, and ain't that the truth? They have the largest of everything, like cars, trucks, grocery carts, serving sizes, and moving constantly, thereby breaking family and social supports. And finding well-made clothing or anything that is built to last is virtually impossible. You can spend a lot of money and still have nothing but junk. This is just one quote from this article that I would encourage you to take a read. And it gives a certain point of view about how we Americans live our lives. And do we pay for education? Do we pay for vacations? Do we pay for health benefits? Do we have maternity leave? No. All of those things are at extra expense.
This article really hit a nerve for me. I am the child of an immigrant. My mother came here from Vienna, Austria after World War II. Because of her background and all the family members that she left behind from my earliest days, I have been very interested in what's going on in the world besides the little world that I lived in as a kid. Vienna, Austria was the capital of a very powerful country, which Americans know nothing about. They were certainly contributing to the beginning of World War I. But when I would tell people that my mother was from Austria, they would start talking to me about kangaroos. And I quickly realized that Americans have a hard enough time figuring out what's going on in their own country and don't have a lot of bandwidth left for what's going on in the rest of the world. And as we are more and more connected to everybody in the world, whether we want to be or not, that leaves a real deficit in our lives. So my mother came here from a country and a family that she loved because there was World War II, and Austria was the first country that Germany seized or joined up enthusiastically with Germany, depending on which views of history you have, and suffered greatly as a result of being on the losing side of World War II. And when the war came to an end, my mother was a very young woman who wanted very much to have a family and realized that there was no one left in her country to marry. And that's what brought her over here, making a huge leap of faith that she would find a better life in this country.
And a husband.
As I was a small child, I knew that her family was suffering greatly because Vienna was occupied by Russia, us, France, and Germany for over 10 years. And during that occupation time, they struggled mightily to recover from having the hell bombed out of them during the war. My mother sent frequent care packages to her family with food goods in them, and I had the very distinct impression that she was awfully lucky to be in the United States and that I was very lucky that she came here because things were so much better here. It wasn't until we got married and saved our pennies and were able to finally go to Europe camping in 1978 that I began
camping 6 weeks in a tent,
that I began to see Europe for myself and Vienna, Austria in particular, because that was of the most interest to me. My aunt had told me stories about the food shortages, how she'd picked up cans of canned cabbage, yum yum, and found that even those were inedible because they were full of worms, and that the family had really suffered. We're so happy that my mother had escaped to the United States. But the country that I saw was not at all what I expected. No. I met my cousin for the first time. She was my age. She didn't have to worry about saving for college as I did. She just went because college was for free. Hmm. My family had free health care. As my grandparents aged, paying for their needs and the treatments that they needed, both medical care and dentistry. Nobody had to pay for that. Nobody had to worry about it. It was free. When my cousin was ready to think about having children of her own, she didn't have to worry about the fact that how would she take care of her kids and hold on a job at the same time. She knew that she would have a lengthy maternity leave that was guaranteed to everyone. Whether she wanted to take advantage of it or not, that was up to her. My uncle questioned me, why on earth don't I see Americans taking their time to visit Europe? Why are they racing around the continent? There was this trope that if it's Tuesday, say this must be Belgium because yes. We were always on the move trying to see it all.
On that bus.
In just the 2 short weeks that most Americans, if they were lucky, had to take a vacation. It was hardly enough time even to get to Europe. And my family over there was able to travel on lengthy vacations, take their time, see it all. Now, I have to admit that going to Europe to see it all took a lot less time than moving around the United States, but still they had the time off and the luxury of not worrying about things that we were always worrying about. They knew that they would have pensions when they retired. We didn't see any homeless people while we were there. They knew that they would not be in danger of being shot by angry people who happened to be walking down the street and in a bad mood as we are here. I realized that although my mother's country had suffered greatly during the war, that they were living at a standard of living that in many ways was much better than ours and certainly gave them a lot more peace of mind than I felt. So I started to ask myself, why do they have so much money for these things and why don't we? Wouldn't we like to have a pension? Wouldn't we like to have maternity leave, et cetera, et cetera? And what I think I have concluded is that we have decided to spend a lot of all the wonderful money that we make in this country on military ventures. And when I look back on my life, whether it was a Republican or a Democrat, we were always sending troops somewhere, meddling in somebody's business, replacing leaders of various countries. It was very, very expensive. And only now that Trump has complained that the Europeans are not doing their share, they are beginning to put a bit more of their income into the military ventures that we have been spending so much money on. You don't see those things when you only travel in your own country. You don't understand the decisions that are made over the years and the ramifications of them. And so this article really got my juices flowing. Amen.
So she's on her soapbox. But it is an interesting perspective. And if you're a traveler, you probably understand exactly what she's saying. Anyway, this article, which I, of course, have a link to on the RV Navigator webpage for this month, will the link to it will take you to the 18 unhinged things Americans think about travel. And you might want to take a look at it yourself and send us an email what you think. I hope this wasn't too much. But in another topic that is near and dear to our hearts, water is important to RVers, and we are always connected to unknown water sources, as you probably know. How do you know when the water is going to be safe? Well, you don't really know. This topic was brought to my attention because we were watching one of our favorite RV YouTube channels, and we noticed that the couple that the hosts of the podcast started using a 3-filter water purifier. They didn't do any research or justify why they would be using this filter. They got it for free. They did a non-scientific taste test, decided that the water was good and the water filter was working. We like this channel, but their obvious willingness to sell out for free merchandise makes us suspicious of any endorsement. The product they were endorsing was an all-metal 3-canisters filtering system, which was really not such a good thing, I don't think anyway. There is a reason why stainless steel is not used in water filters. It imparts a taste. Also, not having a clear housing eliminates visual clues for replacement. How did this filter perform? Nobody knows. I carry with us a $10 TDS meter, which is a total dissolved solids meter, $10 on Amazon, and it gives you a way to evaluate this type of product with facts and data. And I'm kind of a fanatic about that. We, as you probably know, we've talked about it several times, we use a reverse osmosis system, which will clean up virtually any water. If you take a look at bottled water at the store, if you look at the source, it probably is reverse osmosis created water, which is very interesting because you can do this in your motorhome and or in your RV. And we have a desktop water machine that creates virtually pure water from virtually any source. This is the kind of water system that you want to drink because you just don't know what kind of water is coming into your RV.
And it's so important to do good research before you buy things like this, rather than just relying on a free gift or casual comment from a friend that you've traveled with.
Or Facebook. bottom line is we use Consumer Reports, which I've been a member.
It's Ken's Bible.
My Bible. I've been a member of Consumer Reports for over 30 years. Probably even longer than that. When looking into RV products, don't forget to look at Consumer Reports, and it's consumerreports.org. And they do ask you to participate as a member, which costs you a few bucks a year. But to me, to have unbiased data-based reviews of products is really valuable, whether it's your home or whether it's your RV. For instance, they do reviews of generators. Which regenerator is best? Do you need to spend a big bucks on a Honda, or can you get by with something much cheaper? Tires is another topic that they have reviewed recently. Virtually anything that you use, they have some comments about and give you ideas about which are the best products. Another source that you might consider is Wirecutter. Wirecutter is sponsored by the New York Times, and it is reviews things in an impartial basis. But we want data-driven testing. And interestingly enough, this month, another hot topic.
Was that in Consumer Reports too?
No. This one, well, yeah, this is kind of the opposite of the channel that I was mentioning to you a minute ago. This one is another RV channel, but here the guy is, you have to watch this, he is testing black tanks and black tank flush. And this is a topic which people talk about. Just, do you leave your black tank open? Do you leave it shut? How do you clean it out? How do you clean the sensors?
And it's a worry.
It is.
And how do you ever think about it when you're living in a stick-built house?
And how do you contain a black pyramid, a poop pyramid? Anyway, this guy has a YouTube channel, and of course, I'm going to include the link on the webpage. But what he has done, very empirically to me, he took a survey about the average size of a black tank, and then he figured out the average dimensions, length and width, and then he bought a sprayer fitting on the outside
to put fresh water
to spray your tank. And the idea is that it kind of has a hose that sprays a pattern inside your tank and will wash down any of the solids that are in your tank. Okay, does that really work? Well, who knows? I can't see inside my tank, and neither can you. So what he did is he bought a tank and he set it up and cut out the top, put a plexiglass top on it so that he could see what's going on inside there. Are you going to poop in this tank?
I wouldn't think so.
I don't think so. We don't want to really use poop. But he found that NASA has a concoction that they have made up that simulates poop, but it doesn't smell.
Did he find a recipe?
Yes, he found a recipe. This video is fun. It's fun. So he concocted the simulated poop, put it into the tank, and tried the sprayer. And he was going to also test out some of the various chemicals that you put in. So this is a very interesting episode in his YouTube channel. The results were is that, yes, the sprayers do work pretty well, and that, yes, certain chemicals do work pretty well too. So he tested all of those things. And, you know, that's the way you want to go about making decisions about how to keep things clean and
for a good result,
and how to keep, you know, how to get clean water. You don't want to just take a glass of water and taste it and say, oh yes, it's pure. You just can't tell. I've done a lot of soapboxing today. So dear listener, as you get older, are you going to want to downsize?
It's a thing we think about. I think about.
Yeah, we once again have another link to a YouTube video from another channel that they talk about getting older and downsizing. And they talk about the fact that they're in a Class A now, and they're downsizing to a Class C. And I disagree with them heartily.
Well, that's because you still feel comfortable managing a Class A, which was one of their concerns.
But why were they dissatisfied with managing a Class A?
Because it was hard to drive. It was so big.
No, it was hard to drive on the road with all of the traffic blowing them around. They have the wrong Class A, and that if you really want something that's stable on the road, you get a diesel pusher. They should be actually move up to a diesel pusher rather than moving down to a Class C. As they mentioned, the Class C that they bought, or that the couple bought, was actually just as prone to being pushed around by the – and he talked about white-knuckle driving, and he talks about how it takes so much concentration to keep it on the road, straight and narrow. And from my experience, having now driven a Class B, couple of trailers, couple of fifth wheels, and now a couple of motorhomes, is that the motorhome is the diesel pusher motorhome is the easiest to drive. And certainly as a passenger, having a nice quiet interior, having the huge window to look out of, sitting up very high to see the traffic as it develops is really a huge benefit. And I don't see me going back down to a Class C.
And in this video, as you might expect, they talk about a lot of the compromises that they're going to have to make now in terms of cooking, in terms of clothing that they can bring, in terms of having people visit them.
Right.
They were hoping that all their friends kept their Class A's so they could keep visiting with them and their rigs because their rig would be so small.
And I think you have to think about your style of RVing. And our style is hub and spoke. And that when we get to someplace, we stay for a while, and we like to live just like we live at home. We like to have a TV. We like to have air conditioning. We like to have enough
cooking
space,
utensils.
Cooking utensils and a decent kitchen, and the space to live in it when the weather is bad.
Washing machine,
all of that is critical. And if you downsize, you're going to lose all of that stuff. And so, to me, the on-the-road experience is not going to be as good. Plus, they think this is an advantage, but I don't see it at all. When you're in a Class C, unless you're towing another car, you're going to have to lug that thing around every time.
And unhook every time you leave your campsite.
And that we now drive, once we are someplace, we drive our car, which is a normal car, which definitely fits into any parking space. It's not a huge pickup truck, a dually or something, so that you can drive around and be a tourist without having the disadvantage of having your house with you all the time. If you're in a Class B or a Class C, that's not really feasible, and you're going to take up a lot more space. And we have not found much trouble camping where we want to, which is one of the big criticisms. People say you can't go to the national parks, you can't go to the state parks. On our upcoming trip that we are starting next week, we are going to be staying in Michigan State Parks for the entire 2.5 weeks, or probably. We've got reservations at several. And so, no problem. And now we're not going to have full hookups, but that's one of the other big advantages of a big Class A is that you don't have to worry about boondocking because you can boondock for long periods of time without any problems at all. Carrying enough water, having a generator, as all that stuff is built in, and a battery bank that will run your system for quite a long time is a definite plus. So when does a big rig no longer make sense? Never.
Personal opinion.
Off my soapbox. Well, we do have a couple of interesting things. We saw another interesting video. Boy, you're going to have to spend a long time at the RV Navigator.
Have you been watching a lot of TV lately since you've been at home?
Well, not TV, but, I scour the YouTube channels for interesting topics. And we ran across this one was on TV. That's right. The Pebble Electric RV.
It's amazing to even think that such a thing is feasible, but seems to be.
So this is a trailer, a travel trailer that is electrified. It has batteries that turn the wheels as necessary, or you can generate power with them. And it allows you to self-park the RV.
You get out of your car. You're not in the RV. You're like with a remote control.
No. An iPad.
Okay. It's kind of a remote control.
Yeah, it's a remote control.
And you can park the RV by looking at it with your own eyes and seeing how close you are to a tree and how far back you have to go. And you press the control and it gets itself exactly where you are aiming it to be.
So because the wheels are powered by electric motors and it has a decent-sized battery bank, you can disconnect from your tow vehicle and park it. And this particular situation was that the guy was by himself. And, you know, if you're not used to parking
Backing things backing, up is hard for a lot of people, including me.
And because he could stand outside and back it up and see everything, he could walk around and take his time to hitch and unhitch. What a great idea. And, of course, it was all electric, so that when he got there, he pushed a button and it automatically leveled the whole damn thing. And it had, you know, the induction cooktop and all the electric necessary things that it needs. And when you're towing it down the road, it's charging the batteries.
Which very is
also
cool. Very,
it also had solar. This was a segment on a TV program on PBS called Motor Week, but it is also available on YouTube at the link that I provide for you. If you'd like to watch, and maybe you think about getting a Pebble. And at the same time, maybe you want to get an electric motorhome.
I thought this was deceptive. When I watched this, really? It's not a motorhome. It's like a big van.
It's a big V. It's a big V.
It's not a motorhome.
Yeah. Well, they use a delivery van.
Right.
An electrical delivery van, but they outfit the inside with complete...
Anything you'd need as an RVer.
Yeah. And it has, I mean, a complete a shower and a kitchen and all the things. It's a very cool. Gets 270 miles to the to the gallon, I was going to say. Gets 270 miles to the charge, which is decent. It is, once again, all electric, so it has a separate house battery. It has 1,000 watts of solar on the roof, and it makes electric RVing feasible, I think.
Are these things like prototypes, or are they available?
That one was available. Uh-huh. And as a matter of fact, towards the end, they talk about the fact that the chassis that they were building it on is no longer available, so they're switching to a different manufacturer for the chassis because this is a problem. And because it's all modular, they can make the swap to the interior pretty quick. It has a nice bed that comes down. You know, all the features that you would expect in a modern RV, modern Class B.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking about that type of vehicle, but all electric, and it plugs into the standard. Well, I don't want the standard. It plugs into the regular car charging systems.
And a lot of the features that they had were modular, which meant that you could do a fair amount of customizing for the items that you want in your RV that are useful to you without incurring a huge cost or a big delay.
Right, you want to carry
for the customization.
Kayaks, no problem. We'll put a kayak rack in there. You want to carry bikes, no problem. We'll put a bike rack thing in there.
You can't envision yourself ever taking a shower in your rig because you just as soon use the one at the campground. That frees up space for something else.
Now, they did have – I would like to hear somebody tell me how this works. I don't remember what the name of it is, but the toilet is the toilet that bags
like
stuff.
Composting and, toilet.
No. This – you buy bags.
Poop in a bag.
Buy – and it vacuum packs the things and you dispose of them externally.
I wonder what happens when you run out of bags. How special are those bags?
The bags are very special. Poop bags. So you don't have to rinse out your – it did not have a black tank. It had a gray tank but not a black tank.
Solves that problem.
But you didn't have to have a bathroom at all if you didn't want it. So that they, as I said, it does work very well as a modular system. They're coming, and we will probably see electric bigger RVs coming down the road in the not-too-distant future. That'll be very interesting.
When we're on the road, sometimes we're making time and we're on an expressway and we go past a rest area and I think, gosh darn it, why can't we just stay in that rest area for the night? Because I'm thinking about the rest areas in my state, but what is true for my state varies greatly depending on which state you are talking about. So we're going to put a link up for all 50 states and the rules and policies that they have for their rest areas. And some of them you can linger for a while for a nice long nap or even stay overnight. So that is good to know.
Yes, rest areas are very appealing, but the rules and regulations are different in different states. And in Illinois, yes, you can stay overnight, but you can't put out your slides. And, they have various regulations about that, that you want to follow the regulations and be legal, but it would be nice to stop there. It's not so much that it's free. It's just very convenient.
It's faster.
And I think in most of them, most restrictive one that I saw was you could stay for 3 hours.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you could take a nap.
And it would be a real bummer if you settle in for the night and the police are knocking on your door and kicking you out of where you thought you were going to stay for the evening. So it's good to know the rules.
The nostalgia overwhelms me. When was the last time you were in a Blockbuster? A long time ago.
I can't remember.
The last Blockbuster that was by our house was turned into a restaurant.
There are probably people who are listening to this podcast who've never been in one at all. They've been gone for a while.
What was a Blockbuster? Oh, what is a Blockbuster?
It's a place where we used to go to rent video movies. And
VHS most of the time.
They would be very well stocked, very well organized, and you would wander up and down the roads looking for a title that you'd heard of before or the cover of a container of a videotape box that looked intriguing. And that would be what we would take home and be the evening's entertainment.
And these were VHS, and if you did not rewind it,
you got punished.
You got fined. Eventually, we didn't ever rent many DVDs, but this was back in the days when VHS tapes were very popular, and you could rent one for $3 or $4 a night. And this was do I have to say this? This was before streaming. Before the internet, this was probably in the 80s.
And they even sold movie popcorn and big candy boxes so you could simulate the going to the movies experience.
And, of course, you were watching it on your
– TV.
Well, on your – well, we had a 30-inch regular TV, which was huge.
For the time.
And now we have a 77-inch high definition.
Which is really huge.
It was not the movie experience.
So why are we talking about Blockbuster?
Well – yeah, that's a good question. Why? Because there is a website, a free website, by the way, that has simulated
the experience
of Blockbuster, of walking in and seeing shelves full of movies. If you're old enough to have spent time on the aisles of a Blockbuster, a new website called BingeBuster, which once again you can go to our website and click on it, might scratch a long-lost itch. BingeBuster takes the feeling of browsing at a video store in the 90s and applies it to streaming services such as Netflix and HBO Max. The site presents shelves full of movies in a 3D space. You can hop between aisles to browse different genres. Each box that you pluck off the shelves contains a direct link to where the film is available for streaming.
Which can be a problem when you're trying to find where a movie
is
available.
Yeah, this is actually has some definite benefits. And you can filter the entire store based on your current subscriptions, which is also cool. So I can see which ones are free. So this site is, I don't know how they are doing this, but it's free, and it's called BingeBuster. And you can just, it's a website, so it's not an app even, so that you can just go visit that that website and kind of walk through the various movies that you might want to see and then choose one and find out where you can get it. That's cool. Rules for flying with power banks are charging.
Oh, this was a scary story.
Yeah.
You're flying along and one of your batteries bursts into flames?
This just happened in the last week here.
What do you do? Bring down the plane.
In actuality, I think most of the planes now have like blankets that they can put over them.
To smother it?
To smother it. But they had to land the plane. And so the FAA is changing the rules for the power banks that you can bring and the size of the power bank and how you can bring them onto the plane. It's very interesting that you cannot pack any power bank into a
suitcase that you check.
So that's up front. And they have definitely changed the sizes of the power banks that you can bring. Each person is allowed to bring one, depending on the airline, but most of the time it's one power bank of 100 watt hours.
Is this cramping your style? I don't know what you usually bring.
It's right at that, right there. This is a fairly small power bank.
For a serious problem.
Right. And so you're allowed to bring one, and you cannot use it on the plane, so you can't charge anything from it while you're on the plane, which, okay, these days is not too much of an issue because most planes have charging ports. You have to limit the size of it. So as you're traveling, it's best to have one that has its specifications on the power bank itself.
So they won't question it?
So they won't question it because the size is not always indicative of exactly how powerful it is. But once again, where can you go? To the RV Navigator website for this month, which is September of 2026.
Episode 257.
Okay, so you can take a look at that site, and you can look at that all the rules that the airlines are imposing on you.
For your own safety.
Yeah. And as we talk about fires, RV fires. Oh, another great topic. Another topic which, if you watch very many YouTubes, you'll see fires that are caused in an RV. And here's one. Rodents chew RV propane line, and the fifth wheel explodes.
Oh, my God.
Investigators say rodents chewed holes through a flexible propane hose and a fifth wheel in British Columbia. Propane leaked into the RV for days. The accumulated gas ignited, resulting in an explosion that blew the walls and roof outward and severely burned the woman living inside.
Whoa. She didn't smell it?
That's the article. I don't know.
Wow.
Guess what? I don't have a YouTube link to this one.
We can use our imaginations.
What happened? Oh. Our friend Josh, the RV Nerd, another channel that I watch regularly, has some tips and tricks about how to keep your RV from...
bursting into flames?
Yeah. His ideas are very preventative in nature so that you don't have a problem like this. But he has some kind of interesting pictures of RVs in flames.
I don't want to see that.
But the number one reason why motorhomes... Or should we start with number five and go up to number one? Nah, we'll go the full blown. Electrical problems are the number one reason that there are fires inside of RVs. We have a fire suppression system in our
that we installed aftermarket.
Wheel and brake, tire overheating, cooking, unattended cooking heat sources. Propane leaks is number five why there are fires.
For motorhomes.
Yeah.
And trailers have their own problems.
To me, one of the biggest problems are propane refrigerators.
Right. But those are getting to be replaced.
A lot of people are complaining about the fact that they can no longer, that RVs no longer come with propane.
Right.
Most of them are 12-volt refrigerators right. these days. We've talked about this a couple of times.
Right.
And they are upset about that. But when you think about the number of fires that happen as a result of propane leaks from refrigerators, it's probably a pretty good idea. And as always, the refrigerator is between you and the door in most fifth wheels or motorhomes.
And if you're sleeping in your bed, it's hard to get out.
It's hard to get out. Because you can't get past the refrigerator if it's on fire. Propane leaks is number four on the reasons why trailers catch on fire. Towing-related overheating and mechanical failures. So anyway, this is an interesting video to watch to scare the pants off you so that you will then maintain your RV so that it doesn't have leaks and keep the damn rodents out of there. Jeez, can you imagine?
Because when I started reading this article, I thought this was a vehicle that was unattended because you always read about rodents moving into rigs that nobody is living in at the moment.
Exactly.
But that lady was there and she still didn't know.
Well, maybe she just came in and turned on a switch or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're getting near the end here, but I want to talk about 14 clever USB-C gadgets.
Is this a happy note? I don't want to end on burning
yes.
RVs.
Yeah. This is the warning episode of the RV Navigator. That just before we take off on a trip, we have to warn ourselves about all the problems that we could have.
Could go wrong.
Yeah, maybe next month it won't be as 14 clever USB-C gadgets that do so much more than charge your phone. USB-C has really taken over the charging market, and virtually everything charges with USB-C. And this is a cool article because it lists a bunch of things that you can connect up to USB-C, like fans. And I charge our, I charge our fans and distance measurements and lights and all sorts
My toothbrush?
Your toothbrush is USB-C?
USB, I think it's C.
Really? Wow. So all sorts of things that you can buy that will connect up to USB-C. And these days it's nice that you don't have to have a separate charger. You just have one charger that charges everything. And the wires are all the same also.
Uniformity would be such a blessing.
This is one of those cases that, thank you, European Union, by the way.
Who required this?
Who requires this. The United States could not get its act together to require USB as a standardized charging system, and they have done it, and it is. So next month, we will be, at the end of the month, we will be back home after having an exciting trip to Michigan.
With sand in our toes.
And we will be
home. And apples in our refrigerator.
And fresh water in our toes. which we will be at the
no
beach.
No shark bites for us.
No shark bites, right. We will be going swimming in fresh Lake Michigan water, which is the drinking water that we get, by the way. All of Chicago drinks, and probably all the cities around Lake Michigan, all drink Lake Michigan water because it's so clean and pure, and we have lots of water. Okay, so here we are at the end of the month, and we're hoping to see you in a campground near us.
It may happen.
I have a feeling that this episode may generate a bit of traffic in the old email box.
Well, are you ready?
I hope so. We'll find out next month if I've been drowned in people with angry comments about traveling and RVing and
The
world in general. Anyway, dear listener, we always appreciate hearing from you. We do. And we are anxious to get back on the road to see what RVing is really like so we can have some firsthand experiences.
Speak with authority once again.
Yep. So until next month, we'll see you in a campground near us.
Happy travels. Stay healthy.